This is
Tears of Scrutiny. Hi there, welcome back to Tears of Scrutiny. My name is Eva Epin.
And I'm Bari Sidana.
And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about a case called National Rifle Association v. Volo. So it's NRA v. Volo. And I think they decided to take this up in mid-December, if I'm not wrong. So this is, I don't know, like, this one really gets me. Like, I was just talking to Pari about this. Like, this really pisses me off. But basically, this is a case about, in which the court will decide whether a New York regulator's discouragement of companies from doing business with the NRA constitutes coercion in violation of the First Amendment. So I'm going to give you some background because it's a long story. But in 2017, the New York Department of Financial Services opened an investigation into CarryGuard. So CarryGuard is the NRA-endorsed insurance program. It provides liability defense coverage for criminal proceedings resulting from firearm use. So even where the insured person acted with criminal intent, CarryGuard would cover civil and criminal legal costs of its customers who shot a person, right? Theoretically and allegedly, this is for self-defense, but that's the way the NRA would market it to you. It's like, hey, we want you to be safe and we don't want you to be afraid of financial ruin.
Yeah.
But for your peace of mind, here's insurance just in case you shoot a person, right? And like, it's obviously a pretty, like, it's a pretty screwed up product and program. And New York doesn't permit insurance contracts intended to insure criminal acts, right?
Yes, which this seems like it could end up doing that, which is
like that was the reason
New York Department of Financial Services.
Absolutely. So soon after, Maria Vello, one of the New York investigators of the Department of Financial Services,
the former superintendent,
alongside DFS as a whole, started looking into CarryGuard. Three insurance companies that administered and or underwrote CarryGuard, they entered a consent decree where they agreed to stop providing this kind of insurance, and their legal action resulted in them dishing out $13 million in fines.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened in 2017. Fast forward, it's now February 14th, 2018. Is that the right date?
Yes.
It's now February 14th, 2018, and the school shooting in Parkland, Florida has just happened, and the Department of Financial Services issues a guidance signed by Volo soon after, which encouraged insurers to, quote-unquote, continue evaluating and managing their risks, including reputational risks that may arise from their dealings with the NRA or similar gun promotion organizations. It's not an explicit threat, but
it's like she's basically telling them, like, be careful, you might get canceled. Like,
it is that.
It's like, but it's be also, careful your financial dealings.
It's
might
also
not
like,
be good. But it's also like you just fined people for $13 million.
Exactly. And like, it's not just that. It's like, you know how in like the mob and like the mafia movies and stuff, it's like you'll have this like really like scary dude, like he'll go up to you and he'll say bad things happen to people who like,
dude,
bad things happen to people who fuck NRA. Like, no.
But I think also to that extent, from her perspective, right, we saw in the aftermath of Parkland, a rise of the March for Our Lives movement.
Yeah.
Saw a huge push.
And she thought she was just doing her job in warning these companies.
Which is her perspective.
But like, she's a regulator. Like,
that she's just trying to do her job. And yes, it looks awful in the context of her fining three insurance companies, you know, the year prior.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, like, she's, like, looking out for their financial well-being, which
is
understandable, but also, again, like, is it your job?
I just
even though
think
if
this,
like,
went through, like, HR legal, like, somebody, it's like, why would you do this in such close proximity to what just happened?
Department is responsible for regulating the financial condition, market conduct activities, corporate conduct, and administration of the insurance law for the following types of insurers: life insurance companies, life insurance departments of saving banks, public pension funds, fraternal benefit societies, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, like, this is, she is responsible for regulating, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're responsible for advising.
Yeah.
Is my, you know, 2 cents on this.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I don't know the full details of what she was doing day to day in her job.
Yeah. But I just don't see why.
Like, I understand why, because yes, you have to regulate the market.
That I get.
And, you know, a huge part of that is this.
Warning them about.
Like, it might take a hit because of the NRA potentially being canceled. But
you just have to realize, like, not you, but, like, you know, we just have to, like, have a lot of cognizance about, like, gun rights is such a political hotspot, especially at that time, that her getting into that and, like, I guess, you know what, I'm going to have a little empathy. Like, there's no way that she saw that coming.
But, no, definitely. But I think she saw it as a, I'm doing a good thing for these companies, mm-hmm. like, I'm help, or these insurance companies, like, I'm trying to help them out and make sure that they don't make bad financial decisions.
100%. But you read it, like, you read that quote-unquote paragraph from their guidance, and it's just, like, it reads like a threat, just because right before that, what do you read about? The $13 million. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it sucks. But the implication with that guidance is that these companies may face consequences if they do legal business with a company like the NRA. You know what I mean? Like, and what these companies have just watched is their peers, those other 3 insurance companies, get torn apart and, you know, wrecked because they did business with the NRA. And it's a bit of a mess. And it became a First Amendment issue. And the NRA said, we want DFS to, like, immediately cease from engaging in any conduct which has, quote unquote, the purpose or effect of interfering with, terminating, or diminishing any of the NRA's contracts and or business relationships with any organizations, end quote. So it's extreme. Like, they're like, we don't want the DFS to deal with us again or inhibit us in any way.
And the point also for that is, you guys might be confused because it's like, how does the NRA have First Amendment rights? Like, how can...
Oh, I forgot. Yeah. Right?
Like, you know, that's something... I completely forgot about this, but there's this idea in... And there's this legal, yes...
terminology.
Precedent.
I guess the precedent... Okay, yeah, you go first. Yeah.
That a corporation has constitutional protections. For example, like, corporations have some of the rights and responsibilities endowed upon human beings. So this was first used in Santa Clara County, the Southern Pacific Railroad, in 1886. The SCOTUS held that the 14th Amendment applied to corporations here. Mm-hmm. So corporations had the protection of the Equal Protection Clause. But
more recently,
Citizens United, the FEC.
In 2010, we saw that, you know, if money is speech, corporations have the right to speech.
Yeah, and that was... For those of you who aren't aware, it's about a movie that Citizens United made about Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, yeah.
And they aired it and they got, you know, slapped a fine, I think, for a lawsuit because it was like didn't paint her in the best light.
Yeah.
And basically they argue that it was within their First Amendment rights to create that movie and they won. Mm-hmm. Which a lot of people, like, think is a huge issue, blah, 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 whatever. But they won because they had corporate first personhood and because it was well within their First Amendment rights to create and produce that movie. But anyways, that's why the NRA here has the right. And you might be, again, confused. Why does this have anything to do with the First Amendment? Well, again, they are worried that their business dealings are being, you know, are at an issue, and they're also worried that she's coercing, or she was in her role as superintendent of the DFS, coercing those insurance companies to stop working with the NRA, which, you know, is with their business dealings.
Yeah. One more thing that's relevant is, was she a state actor? And, like, what is a state actor?
And so a state actor is someone who is, you guessed it, acting on behalf of the state. And what this means is basically they are acting in their role as a public official or acting in their role as a public employee, an employee of the government. Yeah. So we saw this come up in Kennedy v. Bremerton. This was a huge issue whether or not the football coach Kennedy was a state actor. Because if he wasn't, then technically he was allowed to play on the field.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And, oh, that was like our first episode ever, I think.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Was it?
Wow, yeah. Yeah. Okay, oh. Throwback. but anyways, you guys can go listen to that to hear more about.
Oh, I love that case. Like, I love that case.
Yeah,
so
no,
much.
It's really, it's interesting. And I think my opinion on it has shifted over time, which is interesting also.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. but anyways, so yes, she was obviously acting
on behalf of the state. Yeah, 100%. I don't know. In terms of outcome, like that I think is why when I was reading through this case, it really angered me, because I think if the Supreme Court does rule in favor of the NRA, it could very well prevent New York from enforcing legitimate laws, preventing companies from encouraging people to shoot each other. Like, you know,
I don't know.
But they got rid of carry guard. So it's like, Obviously that's not the concern, but regulatory power, right? Like, that's what we're talking about.
But I think also, I just want to go back to the state actor thing also real quick. That's important because in order for something to be a violation of one of your rights, like your First Amendment right, it has to be a government official who's doing it to you. And, you know, like, for example, at a private school, let's say you are forced to say a prayer every morning.
Yeah.
That's a First Amendment violation.
Because you're at a private school. For example, at a public school, if you were forced to say the Pledge of Allegiance every single day, that would be a First Amendment violation, because you're going to a school that's government funded, your taxes pay for it, and they're state actors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of outcome, I think if the Supreme Court rules in favor of the NRA, it could very well prevent New York from some regulatory power. Like, it could prevent them from enforcing very legitimate laws, preventing companies from encouraging people to shoot other people. You know what I mean? Like, I think it, depending on how it comes down, I think it could have some broad scope.
I think also just knowing this court, though, that they are not ones to rule with broad scope.
I fully agree.
I think that they will very much tailor the decision.
They do. And they will. I just...
Yeah.
We also think... Like, I also, like, don't know how much gun rights, like, obviously they're supposed to be independent and nonpartisan. I think they are, honestly.
Yeah.
But we also know that the NRA specifically is a very vested interest and a very tricky one. And with this court, like, we haven't really seen them say much on gun rights. Like, the one that does come to mind for me is New York State Pistol and Rifle Association v. Bruin. And that's why I feel like with this court and gun rights, it's a risky gamble. And it's just, it feels unnecessary to me. Like, you know, it could have been avoided so easily.
Yeah, but I also think to an extent there's an argument to be made that Fulo, the superintendent of the DFS, I think there's a case to be made that she was also speaking. Like, just because she is an actor of the government, that doesn't mean she loses her First Amendment rights in speaking something. Like, that is called the government speech doctrine.
Yeah, which they're allowed to do 100%. Yeah, but which is there's a very thin line between that just being speech and that being coercion. And I think, honestly, the timeline of how it played out makes it look like coercion.
But it's also, like, the government speech doctrine itself, like, doesn't restrict the government when the government speaks for itself. And I think that there's an argument to be made that although she was giving advice, it was the government speaking, just giving their opinion, right? Like, it wasn't like she was actually regulating
or forcing or coercing anybody,
right? Like, she was just giving her own opinion.
Yeah, there is. So the only, I guess, the precedent that we talk about when it comes to things like this is Bantam Books v. Sullivan. And not going to get into the whole story right now, but essentially it's a long story, but it has to do with Rhode Island, a commission for the morality of youth and censorship, essentially, right? And in that case, it was coercion, and they sent a police officer to, like, these booksellers' house and said, you know, have you done anything about what you were told to do? And what you were told to do was remove these books and not sell these books that we don't want our youth to read because it's obscene, right? And obviously, the superintendent here did not do anything as extreme as, like, sending law enforcement anywhere or threatening anybody in that sense. It's just that this could be misconstrued as a threat. And that's why the NRA, like, I think constitutionally the NRA has a case. Like,
definitely.
You know, and that's why I'm like, this court is a very, like, in the, like, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, and the NRA did rely on Bantam Books to argue that that Willow violated its First Amendment rights.
100%.
By interfering with that relationship that they had with the insurance companies.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think from what I was reading that it will ask the Supreme Court potentially to overturn that precedent or continue to uphold it. But also there's a way for them to make a decision by evading the precedent.
I think it's a very solid precedent. So
yeah, I don't, I think, see, I was just reading from the Fed Society that they,
I'm sorry, from where now? From where now?
The Federalist Society.
Uh-huh.
That as long as they don't make overt threats against protective activity, then they'll evade the prohibitions of Bantam Books. So like,
it's, I thought it was,
when the threats have the intended result, even if the threats the government makes are implicit, attenuated, and ultimately empty.
So this might constitute that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, we'll see. Anyway, that is NRA v. Volo. I think it's an interesting one.
Definitely.
All the First Amendment ones we're seeing recently are really interesting. And I think it's just like one of the symptoms of our times.
Yeah, for sure. I think this
age of corporations and, you know, media.
Yeah.
AI, like, and like what constitutes free speech? What constitutes coercion? Like, these are good questions. These are good questions. And I hope you'll think about those questions for the next couple of weeks. And we will see you in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for listening.
See you guys then.